ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, Dwayne, how's your Tuesday morning going?
It's, you know, it's going. It's we're cranking along, some friendlies out there. Starting to really get that itch. 28 days, it's the 28th of January, which means that we're exactly a month away from the start of Major League Soccer. So that's pretty exciting, Kevin.
Yeah, and we're not even 20 days before the CONCACAF Champions League starts, where five Major League Soccer clubs will play. It is the training camp season opening right now in the rest of Major League Soccer. Some teams have been already training for 2 weeks. Some rosters are getting filled, and there's rumors and there's players being signed left and right in Major League Soccer. We'll talk a little bit about this today, Dwayne, but before, I want to mention to our listeners that yesterday, a special edition of the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast came out where Dwayne interviewed Darren McLeod, Canadian goalkeeper, young Canadian goalkeeper, making its way through USL and other leagues in North America over the last few years, came on the show to talk about his experiences, his views on development, and how the journey of a professional player in the lower leagues in North America and how that can be sometimes challenging, especially when it comes to immigration laws, both countries, things that we've talked a lot about on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast and Soccer Today. But to hear a point of view of someone directly implicated like a goalkeeper, Canadian goalkeeper, it's a fascinating interview, and you can find it right now at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork for $2 a month, Dwayne.
Yeah, I mean, we've interviewed, you know, the stars of the CAMPL and Major League Soccer even in the past. I always find it more interesting to talk to the guys that are on more on the fringes of the roster, because the stars have been trained and have a lot of media experience, and they're not going to give you much. That's why we don't do a lot of athlete interviews on here. That's my philosophy. It always has been. But to talk to a guy on the fringe that's trying to fight for a contract about his experience of what it's like to be in those circumstances, I think is a really insightful thing to do. For instance, we talked about the green card issue the other week, and we sort of implied, oh, well, they're giving away like candy. And well, they can be at the Major League Soccer level. They're not really at the USL level. It's still a process, and it can be an expensive process. And I think Darren in an email mentioned to me that it was something like, maybe it was setting it up, about $1,500 to pay the fees. And a club at the USL level might just balk at that and say, I'm not paying $1,500 for that, because I just get a local guy that's similar without having to pay that, right? So it's a big issue.
And $1,500 for the salary of USL players, which, let's face it, if the minimum salary, at least it was in Major League Soccer, with 55,000 plus bonuses and performance bonuses and stuff. But maybe let's say 60 to round it up a bit. 60,000 is Major League Soccer's minimum salary. Guess what? USL is not the case. And if you're making 25 to 30, and on top of it, you have to pay for your insurance, which Darren did allude to, and on top of it, you have to pay $1,500 the first time to get your visa and to get the immigration laws going. Yeah, it's a big challenge. It's a financial challenge sometimes just to make ends meet. Not necessarily easy to live your dream, and something that I can really relate to, and a lot of people out there can relate to, entrepreneurs and just people trying to make ends meet every month, trying to do something that sometimes we don't love and sometimes we do, but it is a reality in this world. And it was a great interview, and you can listen to it right now at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Dwayne, of course, training camps are open, and now we're seeing a lot of players signing with clubs. We've talked about Chicago a bit last week, and we're going to get to Chicago again. There's big rumors, big names. It feels like they're just trying to find someone to say yes and accept the money. Let's talk about Vancouver for a second. They announced yesterday the signing on loan of a new player, David Milinkovic. He sounds Serbian nationality, Serbian descendants, but he is a French professional footballer. He is a winger. He's on loan from Hull City. And as much as a 25-year-old is still young in the world of football, I think it's fair to say that you can call Milinkovic a journeyman, a young journeyman of European football. He's played at a lot of different clubs. He's been actually owned by Genoa from 2016 to 2018, but it was on loan at four different places, even to Scotland in Heart of Midlothian, which probably was his best stint over the last 8 years. 24 games, 6 goals played for Heart of Midlothian in the Scottish Premiership. But in Hull City, he played 8 games, did not appear in the championship once in an 18-month period, and he finds himself now on loan with the Vancouver Whitecaps. There is a press release available on the Whitecaps website where Axel Schuster, their new sporting director, talks about, yeah, maybe he was missing some concentration over the last year at Hull City. Hopefully, this can be his second chance. I don't know, Dwayne. This feels like a big gamble to me. Maybe not a big financial gamble, but it is a big roster gamble, and there's a chance. There's a big chance that this will not pan out for the Whitecaps.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how you define gamble, really, right? Because it's a loan. You can get rid of them pretty quickly if it's not working out. But as you say, it takes up a roster spot. It's another answer to how they look to proceed this year. It's another suggestion to me that the Whitecaps are going to try to do things in a Moneyball kind of way. That they feel that they cannot compete at the top spending level within Major League Soccer.
I watched it last night. Can't believe you just put a Moneyball reference. That's literally what I did last night.
I watched that movie about 3 or 4 times. Once every other year, I watch Moneyball. It's a good movie.
It's a great movie. Always, Brad Pitt working for the Vancouver Whitecaps could be a good idea. Where's Billy?
One day Brad Pitt will get his ring. One day. Look. Yeah, I mean, it's not inspiring is what I'll say. And it's, you know, if you look on the reaction to this within Whitecaps sort of forums, what you'll see is a lot of people that are looking to Hull kind of voices out there and going, oh, this doesn't seem like it's a good thing. Now, what I'll say to that is, first off, that level is slightly higher. So maybe the slight change in level down is going to be good. And I know people always get their backs up when I suggest the championship's a higher level than MLS, but it is.
Championship is like a higher level than most Premiership League in the entire world outside of 5 or 6. So
if it wasn't for the money, it costs a lot of money to bring a championship level player over. If it wasn't for that, it would be a great place for MLS talent because I do think they're equatable. It's a very athletic league, a physical league. And I think that fits, but because England pays their players quite a lot, the championship teams are quite well off. They pay them more, and that means it's hard to compete that way. So anyway, look, it's just not inspiring, but it is a second chance. And I guess that is one way that if you are indeed a Moneyball type team, one Brayden Billy Beane's playbook was that you go after players that have a flaw, a significant flaw, something on their resume that makes other teams go, we're just going to try someone else. It's a little less risky. So you're looking for upside. You're looking for value on your upside, and you have to be willing to – the other side of that, of course, is you have to be willing to quickly move from it if the value isn't there. And
so you're saying that if he turns out to be like Jeremy Giambi, then Billy Beane needs to trade him right in front of the manager. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, well, maybe not quite that dramatic, but if he doesn't work out, he certainly does need to move on from him quickly, and that's the other part of it. And – it just doesn't bring, like, when I look at a move like that, the potential to me, the ceiling of that is a slightly above average MLS level starter. And that's a good return for sure on a very low risk move. But the ceiling isn't like MLS star. So if you're a Whitecaps fan, you're not going to really get yourself worked up too much about it. But they do need that said. The Whitecaps, like any of the teams that didn't make playoffs last year in Major League Soccer, need more replacement level players. So if this guy can be turned out to be a replacement level player, then that is an upgrade, really. It gives him a little more depth. So it's not the worst move in my mind. It's just not, you know, you kind of go, oh, okay, turn the page and move on to the next signing, right? Yeah.
And if you want to know more about the Whitecaps offseason, last week we talked to Dan Ritchie of Sportsnet 650. He covers the Whitecaps, has a podcast and a radio show called Fine Lines that you can find at Vancouver Whitecaps podcast where Dan Riccio talks about the Whitecaps, and he mentioned last week that this offseason is still not the full, I would say, scouting front office network is not fully set up yet, and it's still in the process of being built, and maybe this summer, like he mentioned last week, the Vancouver Whitecaps will have their scouting department in order to maybe have a better signing, at least better potential of signings, and not necessarily have to go through this route. For the next transfer window, let's talk about another transfer window. And I know we've actually talked a lot about Vancouver last week. We've talked about Chicago last week, too. But we're going to continue to talk about Chicago, Dwayne. No, we're not going to talk about the logo. And we've alluded to it last week. Last week, they had 19 players under contract. Six of them are homegrowns. And out of the six, four have never played for the Chicago Fire first team. This was their roster. They've been a Venezuela signing yesterday, which a young player with maybe a great upside, like you mentioned, but a low-risk type of signing. And if it doesn't pan out, it doesn't. This could be a higher-risk signing. Pizarro from Monterrey, one of the best strikers in Liga MX, in one of the best teams in Liga MX. We're talking about rumors of a potential $15 million transfers. This rumor was really big yesterday. It looks like it's dying down. But it's looking like Chicago wants a suitor, wants someone to come over with a name. They missed on Chicharito. Chicharito was famously on Chicago's discovery list over a few years ago. Apparently since 2018, it's not the case. But Pizarro could be a good signing. Less sizzle, maybe more steak than Chicharito. Is that enough to save the bad, bad offseason of the Chicago Fire Football Club?
Yeah, Manuel Angel Navarro is the name of the young Venezuelan that they signed yesterday. I always butcher my Spanish name, so, you know, let's call him Mike. Mike Angel Navarro.
Mike Angel. That sounds like a great name for like an action star. Mike Angel. Yeah. Starring Mike Angel. Welcome to Chicago. Starring Mike Angel.
Exactly. Anyway, yeah, he's 20 years old, left back. It's actually, strangely, one of the areas that the Fire actually have a fair amount of depth on is the outside back positions. But I think that's a good move for them. When you're talking about other high-profile Mexican international signings, which is what we're talking about here, and for the record, what has happened is that they have sort of shot this down today, or like quietly and with sources of the Pizarro rumors, Rodolfo Pizarro. They have suggested that maybe they're looking for other targets. But I think what's happening, Kevin, is that anyone who's a high-profile Mexican playing in Liga MX they're looking to move, that their agents are now trying to start Major League Soccer rumors to try and boost their price up, because it seems to me that the MLS teams, particularly teams like Chicago, are like desperate to get Mexican sort of star power into the league.
So you're saying it's 2:55 a.m. and a single person are in the club looking at all the potential candidate out there and trying to find a suitor, but it's 5 minutes till the club closing. Is that what you're saying Chicago is?
Well, maybe, yeah. It's, you know, you're trying to get a guest to take home from the coat check line.
I've seen it happen. Yeah. Talk about desperate.
A lot of action in the coat check line. I'm not that I've been in coat check lines at 3 in the morning very often anymore. But nonetheless, it's, look. Pizarro is a player that has a good level of talent. I think he'd be a decent player in Major League Soccer for sure. But the price tag that Monterrey is putting on him is $20 million. Now, I've seen some suggestions that they would sell him for $10 million to a European club, because that is Pizarro's desire, is to go to Europe. But if it's MLS, it's going to be something big. So they're throwing this big number up, which is why Chicago's, which apparently were reportedly going to go as high as $15 million, which I think is probably about $5 million too much for this player. They were willing to go there. Look, the Fire need something. They need something on the field for scoreboard reasons. They need something on the field for marketing
seating reasons. Yeah, marketing. That's a good word.
Yeah, and I don't know if Pizarro is going to sell enough tickets. Like, there would be, I'm sure, some that would be more, oh, okay, Mexican International's there. I might give them more of a look, but it's not going to turn the turnstiles the same way that Chicharito would. Obviously, Chicharito is a much different proposition when you're talking about a Mexican international.
Player is one thing. A great name is another. Those sometimes are the same. Sometimes they're not. Pizarro is a lot better player than Chicharito is right now as an attacking midfielder. But he doesn't bring the baggage, the recognition, or just the stardom. Sometimes there's intangibles. There's charisma. Sometimes that makes you a star before your performance is on the field. Chicharito is a bit that. So he does have that stardom, that effect, that bigger-than-life effect Pizarro would sign to Chicago, guess what? I think it would not even make the newspapers in Chicago.
Yeah, maybe like in briefs, you know, along the side of a page. I've laid out newspapers before. There was always room to put a little paragraph in to fill a space. You can't sell an ad in. But yeah,
but if you're Chicago, what you need is a signing that will make the front page of the sports section.
No, at least, for sure he's not doing that. Maybe in the Latin language or the Spanish language papers in Chicago, maybe a little further up. But no, he's not making the Tribune's A1 or S1, I should say. So he's definitely not making A1. Would not make S1 either.
Would not make S1. So that's what they need, though. And we're wondering, can they get there? Can Chicago pull it off? Or will Chicago be an expansion team in 2020? Which, that's what they are right now. Let's call a spade a spade. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck and use a logo that looks kind of like a duck, maybe it is a duck.
Well, look, and it's not the worst idea for this is to strip it down to the bone and build back up. It isn't. However, if you're going to also rebrand, why would you combine the two at the same year? Because you're losing the chance to burst into that market. If his plan was to strip down and build back, to me, he should have done that. The new owner should have done that
last year. Well, he wasn't the owner. Well, he wasn't the owner
last year. Should have done it this year, but kept the rebrand for another year. Did more consulting all year. Stayed at Bridgeview for a little bit longer, and got ready to go into Soldier Field with a true player in line. Because now, this is the issue: is that you're losing the opportunity to burst into Soldier Field with this big name. I believe that what has happened is that they believe that they could just write a check and bring in some big names that would allow Chicago Fire to be thought about on the same level and being able to compete on the same level as Atlanta, as Seattle, as Toronto, as any of the teams that spend big and get big names.
New York, LA, like, let's be honest. I'm surprised, and this could have been a conversation any year of the last decade. Maybe except the Schweinsteiger year when Nikolic came and they made the playoffs. Chicago has the potential. Like, Chicago is one of the biggest sports cities in the world. Okay, maybe not soccer, but every other sport. And it's a big city. It has a lot of great attractions, tourist attractions. But for living, it's, of course, there's, if you go out to the suburbs and there's troubled areas, but that's the case in a lot of cities around the world. But Chicago, I visited Chicago a couple years ago for the All-Star Game, and I had one of the times of my life. It's an amazing city, and I don't understand how they cannot land. Not just a big name, like landing Schweinsteiger in the twilight of his career doesn't even cut it. In the sunset of his career, maybe it's more like it. Like literally while the sun was setting, Schweinsteiger played for Chicago.
So he's in the Kochak too, yeah.
Exactly. So I'm surprised, Dwayne, that Chicago is not using Chicago as an attraction to get a big name. And I think it's because of the brand of Chicago, but I mean more of the reputation of just a terribly run soccer club for the last decade that is telling people, at least big players that want to come over, like, okay, maybe I'll choose another city.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think Chicago's issue is twofold here, is that the names, the cities I said, Seattle and Toronto were included in the list I just did. In both cases, these are cities that are teams, I should say, that are able to attract big names. But you think about the names that Seattle and Toronto attract are big names, big good players, not necessarily big names, Defoe aside. Chicago's not there because they're bad. So if you're a player at that level and you're going to come to Major League Soccer, you're going to be more attracted to go to a place like Seattle or Toronto because you're going to look at them and go, well, okay, I can't get the beach. And let's be blunt here. When European players want to come to North America, part of the reason they want to come is for the weather. And Chicago does not have that advantage as no one in the Northeast does. And New York City is the exception in terms of attraction, but it's New York friggin' city. That is a different level of city. That's a world city as opposed to a regional city, which I would put a place like Toronto, Seattle, even Chicago.
Well, Chicago, it's the second biggest city, right? It's the second city.
Third biggest city in the United States. When you look at city in Canada, United States right now, yeah.
When I say city, I mean like a downtown, you know? It's a real downtown. It's a real city. Skyscrapers galore, right? There is something there. And if you wrap it carefully, that package can be can be really enticing to players. It's just how about you present yourself. Some players from Europe do like to come over for the American dream, for the American experience, to go to the Wild West. Yeah, there's cliches in Europe too.
It's a great city, but it's Copenhagen in a European's mind.
It's not Paris, but we always have
exactly. And you know, if you're in Europe and you know Copenhagen, you know it's a brilliant city that's among the great cities of Europe. But in North America, we don't view it the same way. And I think that's probably the way most Europeans look at a place like Chicago, because it's Midwest. The weather's not great. It's on a lake, not an ocean. All those things, right? They know it. It's huge, obviously. And in the sports culture, you're bang on that there are very few cities in the world that have, you know, outside of Europe, in Europe, Barcelona maybe would have the amount of diversity in sports that they do. But yeah, it's pretty rare.
From basketball team to hockey team to two baseball team, of course, Chicago Cubs and the White Sox. You can never start saying two baseball team and say the White Sox first, because Chicago people don't care about the White Sox, which is normal. But the Cubs. So you're absolutely right. But on that note, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, Dwayne, we'll talk a little bit about the Olympic qualifiers. We'll do some bits and bytes. And guess what? We'll talk about soccer.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. If you like what Dwayne and I do, of course, we're not the only ones on the Sports Podcast Network. Jonathan Tannenwald, Patrick Williams of the Around the A podcast, which is his birthday today. So happy birthday, Pat Williams. It's also Gigi Buffon's birthday, Dwayne, Gianluigi Buffon. But just to finish my thought, if you like what we do, go to our Patreon page, get more podcasts, premium podcasts with no ads, of course, and you can find them at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2, $5, $10 a month. You can also donate the amount you would like if you want to be creative in your support to our cause. Dwayne, Gianluigi Buffon is 42 today. So yeah, maybe you can still be an international goalkeeper. Who knows?
Yeah, he's a 42-year-old professional keeper. No longer at the peak of his game, for sure. But if you are listening to this and you are younger than 42, which I suspect is most of our listeners, not all, but most, I would suggest maybe put the Snickers bar down, get to the gym. You still have a chance.
It's never over. When there's a will, there's a way. And I think that that is a good segue to tonight starts the Olympic qualifying process for CONCACAF for the Olympics for the women side. Costa Rica, Panama, first game tonight at 6 p.m. in Houston, Texas, followed by United States of America, U.S. Women's National Team versus Haiti at 8:30 p.m. tonight. Both games can be found on FS2 for Costa Rica and Panama, at least for sure. Tomorrow, Canada, St. Kitts and Nevis, Mexico, Jamaica. We're giving a lot of attention this time around to the Women's Soccer Olympic qualifying for CONCACAF because it deserves. You have great players playing in CONCACAF. You have one of the best women's teams in the entire world. Two of them, for sure, in Canada and the United States, and some good ones in Mexico, Jamaica, and Edie, and a lot of interesting narrative, a disparity also in this tournament, and when we look at the infrastructures of all the countries involved, and I think it's important that we continue that momentum that a women's game had last year, and we need to continue this, and now that we can watch these games in Canada on One Soccer, on Fox, FS2 in the United States, I know what I'm doing tonight.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's worthwhile. And they should be a little more competitive. Now, look, the interesting game tonight is the first one, the Panamanian-Costa Rican game. You have Panama program that did get fairly deep in World Cup qualifying for them, a bit historic there, playing against Costa Rica, you know, obviously very good on the men's side and have been to Women's World Cups. They were in Canada 2015. So that is a game there that's going to matter. And both of those teams will be looking to advance out as that number two side on the U.S. side. Haiti is a program that, realistically, the U.S. women's national team is going to, you know, probably do what they do tonight and roll over Haiti. And potentially it might even be a fairly big scoreline. But if you look at what the Haitian youth teams have done, where they have qualified for Youth World Cups on the women's side of recent times. There is a program there that is worth keeping an eye on, and certainly will perhaps push the other two teams a little bit further. For the U.S., this is more about looking, I believe, at the 10 through 20 numbers on their roster and hoping that they step up and push the top players to make that Olympic. Their Olympic roster, which is only 18 players, make the Olympics. So that is a big storyline that they'll be looking at, is to see who exactly, goes to the Olympics and tries to get on that medal stand, because they well entered the games as the gold medal favorite, quite clearly, even though they did not medal at the last Olympics. That was the first major championship in several years that they did not. I think it is also of note that as dominant as the women's national team in the United States has been, they have never done, as indeed no women's team has done, the double in the same cycle. So that will be something that will be motivating them. And it all starts tonight. If you listen to American previews, they'll talk a lot about how you can't ignore this qualifying and they're not there yet and all that. They're saying the right things. The truth is, you can pretty much get the bullpoint pen out and
You can write
put the point.
win, you can put win next to U.S. women's national team. But it's also the post Jill Ellis era that starts in a competitive level in CONCACAF, at least for the U.S. women's national team. So there's a narrative there. It's fun to see the evolution of this team, tactically speaking, and how they will continue to evolve. Since the World Cup last year to the Olympics later this year, 6 months away from the Olympics. And for me, it will be interesting to see if the U.S. tactically can evolve. Athletically and technically, they have maybe the best crop of players in the game itself. So it's tactically that will be, for me, where the evolution needs to be seen for the U.S. women's national team and for Canada, of course, and for pretty much the entire game heading into an Olympic where I believe will be the most contested gold, silver, and bronze medals in the history of the women's game in the Olympics because of the rise of the European game. And since Rio, I think that's the biggest change, at least in the women's game since the last Olympic. It's the rise of the European countries, the rise of great teams, but it's unfortunate for Norway, example, Ada Egerberg just teared her ACL yesterday, and she will potentially miss the Olympics this year if Norway qualifies. So there is a lot of the rise of Norway, well, not Norway, the rise of Europe, Norway by extent, but the rise of Europe as a women's soccer powerhouse now is the biggest change since 2016. And to make sure the U.S. continues on a dominant streak, they do need to evolve tactically. And that's what I'll be looking at. Maybe not tonight, but in this CONCACAF Olympic qualifier tournament is something that I would like to see how the United States adjusts tactically to maybe different challenges.
Yeah, certainly it would be of note that it'd be interesting to see that for sure. Look, it's sometimes hard to find reasons to watch this, but I do think there are much more interesting storylines this place. And in particular, if you want to move back to Canada for a second, watching the games tonight, that first game in particular, that is who they're going to likely have to beat if they win their side anyway to get to the Olympics. Well, not likely, well, I guess it is likely. I mean, if the US were to slip up, then there's a problem here. But then, which is always the funny thing about this tournament. I mean, most Canadian national team fans are more willing to be cheering for cheering against the U.S. out of instinct. Do not do that during this. You want them to go 3-0. You really do.
You do not want to face the U.S. in a win or go home game. Go USA, go.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I was just quickly checking the women's qualification here for the Europe. I think that. I think Norway might already be out because I believe they qualify through the World Cup process, just as a note of clarification, but I'll check that after and tweet it out.
We'll have more, of course, on the Olympic qualifiers and the rest of the world on the Women's Soccer Review in the next couple of weeks. Dwayne and Jonathan, and I'll produce the show for next week in our Patreon feed and everywhere else. But on that note, Dwayne and I will watch the games tonight. We'll keep an eye on Panama, of course, playing tonight, and the U.S. and Haiti. Tomorrow, Canada plays St. Kitts Nevis and Mexico, Jamaica. Those are the games coming up Tomorrow, we can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SBN. Live all this week at 10:45. Back to our regular schedule next week. And you can find our premium podcast at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Until tomorrow, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcasts.